Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, August 8, 2017. Elections are underway in Kenya and many polling stations have closed.
I mean, it's patriotism, you know, this is for my country, you know, and I want to be involved in it. I want my voice to be heard. And, you know, it's the only thing I can do to change things.
And intercommunal fighting in Gok State leaves more than 40 people dead.
It is fighting between two factions as a revenge. On that date of 5th of August, there is a dead foot. It resulted to the killing of 42 people, both sides.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Nairobi, where polls are closing after Kenyans went to cast their ballots for president, governors, legislators, among other posts. VOA's Jill Craig reports from the polls in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Kenyans stood in line for hours Tuesday to cast ballots in hotly contested nationwide polls, facing rain and both cold and hot weather conditions throughout the day. Helen Mazito is a 32-year-old voter from the Githogoro slum in Nairobi. She waited in line for well over 7 hours, but says she isn't complaining.
Let me say the election mode is good. People are voting. Once they vote, they are going home. Nothing bad has occurred. No bad event. People are responding well.
33-year-old voter Emmanuel Musundi Wamukundi waited for more than 4 hours at his polling station in Nairobi. He says the lines were a bit disorganized in the beginning, but otherwise things seem to be running smoothly.
I mean, it's patriotism, you know, this is for my country, you know, and I want to be involved in it. I want my voice to be heard. And, you know, it's the only thing I can do to change things.
The Electoral Commission said heavy rain hampered voting in three parts of the country, Turkana North, Baringo, and Samburu, and helicopters were required to airlift materials and polling officials. The commission said voting would be extended in any polling stations that got a late start. The presidential race pits the current president, Uhuru Kenyatta, against his longtime rival, opposition leader Raila Odinga. Both candidates expressed confidence Tuesday as they cast their ballots in Nairobi. Odinga told supporters gathered outside his polling station to continue mobilizing to come out and vote. This victory is ours. Kenyatta said the ruling Jubilee coalition had run a very positive campaign and that he believes Kenyans want us to continue moving forward. Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and former Senegalese Prime Minister Aminata Touré visited Jamhuri High School in Nairobi as co-leaders of the U.S.-based Carter Center Election Observation Mission. Kerry referenced the long lines he'd seen at polling stations as a sign of the commitment of Kenyan voters.
It's too early for us to draw any kinds of conclusions, so we're not. But obviously, given what's happened in the past and given the stakes for the future, this is a very, very important election, and clearly the citizens of Kenya are taking it very, very seriously.
Kenya's Electoral Commission is using biometric voter identification and electronic vote transmission systems to conduct the elections. The vote is seen as a key test for the commission after voting technology failed during the last polls in 2013, sparking allegations of vote rigging. Like so many Kenyans, voter Francis Mutiso Matheka is urging peace above all else in these elections.
I would love to tell fellow Kenyans to vote peacefully. We need this country after today, after tomorrow, and this country is greater than any one of us.
Also calling for a peaceful outcome Monday was former U.S. President Barack Obama, the son of a native-born Kenyan. Obama issued a statement urging voters in his ancestral homeland to reject violence and incitement, respect the will of the people, urge security forces to act professionally and neutrally, and work together no matter the outcome. The winner of the presidential election must receive 50% of all votes and 25% or more of votes in at least 25 of Kenya's 47 counties. If neither candidate hits that threshold, a runoff will take place. Results are expected by Friday, though by law, the Electoral Commission has up to 7 days to announce. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
GOC state officials say more than 40 people were killed and 50 others wounded in a wave of intercommunal fighting over the weekend between the Wat and Ayuel communities. State authorities say they have deployed police and soldiers to prevent more violence in the area. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Local leaders say armed youth from Wat carried out revenge attacks against the Ayuel community on Saturday, which led to more fighting between the two communities in the southern and northern part of the capital, Chiobet. Isaac Mayom Malek is the Minister of Local Government and Law Enforcement in GOC State.
It is fighting between two factions as a revenge. On that day of 5th of August, there is a dead foot. It resulted to death of or killing of 42 people, both sides.
Malek says 53 men injured in the fighting from both communities and are being treated at various health facilities.
About 20-something are in Chiobet Hospital. 13 were referred to Rumbek. Those with severe injuries were taken to Rumbek, and some are in Abro. About 20 are in primary health center.
Tensions between the Wat and the Ayuel community dates back to 2012. Malek says the Wat community alleged that someone from Ayuel community killed a child from Wat, which spread violence. Malek says 22 people were killed in the incident. GOC State Governor Madol Majok chaired a State Security Committee meeting yesterday to discuss how to end the violence. Malek says officials decided to deploy both military troops and police to stop the fighting and to investigate the killings.
We have deployed the forces around the towns. Second step, we have sent 4 commissioners to go and talk to the cattle keepers who are camping 3 hours from here to move far away from the stated quarter. The third one is for commissioners to identify the ringleaders who led that attack, and the murderers also are to be identified and arrested.
Chiobet County Commissioner Peter Ayondut, who is also a member of the committee appointed by the governor, says the panel is still gathering information from local chiefs to help identify the perpetrators of crimes committed last weekend.
We are trying now to sum up the number. It will be the last day today to know the number of houses burned and to know the number of items looted and effectives also. Those who lose their lives.
Commissioner Dut says the situation in Chiobet is now calm and residents are going about their day-to-day activities. Malek is calling on citizens to remain calm.
Give a chance to the government to apprehend those who are actually on both sides who are leading this problem, fighting.
Late last month, 20 people were killed and 18 others got injured when the Wat and Ayuel community fought in Chiobet. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A South Sudanese legal expert says his country's transitional legislative assembly has violated the 1999 East African Community Treaty, which sets rules for electing members of the East African Legislative Assembly. South Sudanese lawmakers elected 9 of their colleagues last week to represent their country in the East African Legislative Assembly. Wani Santino says the election of Gideon Gatpan Thor on the SPLM-IO ticket was illegal because the SPLM-IO Taban faction is not a registered political party in South Sudan. He says he has petitioned the government of South Sudan for not following the rules. Santino also says the election of 3 female lawmakers and opposed is illegal.
The Treaty of East African Community 1999, Article 50, Clause 1, Paragraph 3, says that political parties are eligible to contest. But now when you see what went on in South Sudan on the ground in the parliament regarding the members elected, you see that right from the vetting committee, SPLM-IO among the ones who were elected. It is not in line with the depth and spirit of the treaty. It is, and IO is not a political party.
You were saying that the SPLM-IO is not a political party, and so anybody who represents the SPLM-IO cannot become a member of parliament in the East African community. Is that right?
In fact, it's still the government is violating the treaty. The best they should have done is to register it as a political party, one. Two, either to join the mainstream, which is the government, the SPLM, the ruling party, or they should have been advised to stand as an independent candidate, because in the treaty, there's nowhere stipulated that a rebel group can become a member of parliament.
But the government would say that the SPLM-IO under Taban Dengai is a partner with them in the 2015 peace agreement. And so, technically, whoever runs on the SPLM-IO ticket is a partner of the government.
The agreement between the government and the rebel cannot override the regional treaty. Just simple as that. It cannot override the regional treaty.
And so what is your next course of action? Last time when President Kiir appointed the 9 members of parliament, you went ahead and blocked that. What is your next course of action on this issue?
I'm to go back to court. It's my duty as a citizen of South Sudan to ensure that there's a rule of law. It's my duty as a citizen, this African community, to see that there's a rule of law. Our people are taxpayers, and the government is paying money to run the affairs of the community. So the government has to be accountable to the citizen. I have been notified by the court. The next session, it will be on the 6th September, and the government has to appear, because the Secretary General of the East African community, they have given their statement of defense to the petition.
How about the other 3 members who were unopposed during the elections? What does the East African Code of Conduct say about people who are unopposed?
There is no provision that says that an opposed member immediately can be declared to have won an election. And in fact, we are still going back to court and reject this. Which criteria did they use in order to reach into that outcome, that members of parliament who are not opposed, especially the females, to be declared winners? What I know is the Constitution of the Republic of South Sudan 2011, women are given 25%. And when you calculate the percentage of the 3 out of 9, it is 33, which is above 25%. In fact, what the government should have done, The 3 women that have campaigned, and the best 2 are selected based on the manifestos. So by just declaring that the 3 people just won, okay, they have gone and opposed. I don't know what are they going to do in Iala. We shouldn't allow Iala to become a dumping place.
That's Wanis Santino, a South Sudanese legal expert who petitioned the South Sudan government in the East African Community Court after President Kiir appointed 9 lawmakers to represent his country in the body. Santino won the case in June, and South Sudan was then ordered to elect members of parliament to represent the country in the East African Legislative Assembly. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, teaching improves at some schools in South Sudan. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
would you break the law to save a loved one?
I would do that. I would do it. Because if it has to do with life, then I must break the law to save the life. But if I have to go to jail after that and answer questions from the police, there is no problem, provided the life has been saved.
Breaking the law to save someone is impossible. It's impossible. I can't break the law despite the danger of what the person goes through.
Of course, we are the ones making the law. I can break the law to save my loved one.
There is this will, there's this love that God has placed within man that is ready to sacrifice. And so, unwillingly, we are geared to sacrifice for another person we love.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our health segment. Today, we look at efforts to combat the widespread of malaria in Nigeria. The World Health Organization says a campaign to provide anti-malaria drugs to hundreds of thousands of young children in northeastern Nigeria will prevent thousands of deaths from the waterborne disease. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization reports it has provided anti-malaria drugs to nearly 900,000 children aged 3 months to 5 years out of a child population of 1.1 million in areas formerly held by Boko Haram militants who sought to set up an Islamist state in northeast Nigeria. The high coverage of this vulnerable population with life-saving drugs is part of a new strategy to tackle malaria, a major killer of children under age 5. The director of WHO's Global Malaria Program, Pedro Alonso, tells VOA the agency has completed the first round of an emergency approach to quickly stop the disease from striking a fatal blow. He says the drug both clears the parasites that might already have invaded the child system and provides protection for the next 3 to 4 weeks.
By repeating this operation to the same children every month over the next 4 or 5 months, which is the high transmission area, we may potentially, unfortunately, won't be perfect, and therefore we won't be able to stop all deaths, but we should be able to have a massive impact in terms of prevention of disease and death in that specific population group, which is the highest risk group and where mortality concentrates.
Alonso says WHO estimates more than 8,000 cases of malaria every week, including 7 deaths among northeastern Nigeria's 3.7 million population. He adds these figures are underestimated and the true number is probably 5 to 7 times higher. He says about 10,000 lives will be saved by providing anti-malaria drugs to the same 900,000 children every month until November, when the period of high transmission will be over. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Students and parents in Jonglei State say teaching has improved at several schools where teachers receive incentives. As Dengai Deng reports from Bor, the teachers say the monetary incentives motivates them to spend more time in school.
The European Union is giving the Impact Project, which works with the Mott MacDonald, money to supplement the government's monthly salary of just 600 South Sudanese pounds. Each teacher in selected primary schools across South Sudan receives 36 euros or 40 US dollars per month. We work out to a little more than 4,500 pounds a month. The students in Jonglei State say they have noticed a marked difference. They say teachers come to class regularly, unlike in the past. 14-year-old Ameria, a primary aid pupil at Bore Mixed Primary School, says before, days would go by without a single lesson, but not anymore.
I was worried because of county exam, county mock, I feel that I will fail. But right now, I think if other exam come, I will pass well.
17-year-old Anyer Majung Thiong is in primary 7 at St. Andrew's Nursery and Primary School. She too says teaching has improved in our class.
The learning is good. We are taught every day. We receive all the subjects. And I think this, the way our teachers are teaching us will let us pass our exam.
Garang Makui is a guardian to his younger sister and a brother who attend Mandela Primary School in Bor.
I'm impressed by the report I get from the people who are in primary school. They say the teaching has improved by far, that their teachers who used to come once a while are now regular in their classes. They are receiving their classes from 8 till their departure time. There is a marked improvement from the learners, like the one in class 3, can now read properly, can now write properly.
Makui urges the European Union to continue supporting South Sudanese teachers.
The better way to change a nation like South Sudan is by enlightening the whole population. When they are enlightened of the necessity of education, the whole communities of South Sudan will be changed. And even this tribal conflict that is ravaging all through will cease.
Mamere James Garang is the Education Liaison Officer for Food for the Hungry. A NGO helping the schools in Jonglei State to comply with impact projects criteria set by the Education Ministry for selecting schools that qualify to benefit from the incentive. In some cases, Food for the Hungry also helps primary schools in Jonglei State to open bank accounts to enable them to benefit from the incentive, which goes directly to the schools. Grant says more than 900 teachers from 80 primary schools across Jonglei have received their incentive for the month of May and June.
Each teacher is paid 9,606 pounds, an equivalent of $80. The aim is to motivate teachers so that they can teach well in the classes. And the overall goal is to improve the quality of education in South Sudan.
Thionga Majuk is the deputy head teacher at Bore Mix Primary School. Majuk says teachers are now willing to remain at the school during the entire school day.
The teachers were deserting, and some were absenting themselves. And when you add them, they say, I have problem at home, my family is having no food. And now all the teachers are coming to the school because this money being paid to the teachers by the impact program is helping teachers to buy one pack of sorghums.
Samuel Ajunga Adet, a teacher at St. Andrew's Nursery and Primary School, says the incentive has improved his living standard.
The amount that we were getting before the incentive from the European Union, it was not able to cater for your needs as a teacher and the need of the family and even some people that you are supporting. So this one is helping me and is helping all my dependents.
Teachers receive the incentive every 2 months. The program began in May and continues for 18 months. I am Deng Gaiding for VOA News in Bor.
A young South Sudanese professional who grew up in Kampala and worked in South Sudan is one of this year's Mandela Washington Fellows. In part four of our series on this year's yearly fellows, Joseph Oliver Wani says a school for homeless children he visited in the United States has empowered him with plans for what he wants to do in South Sudan. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Joseph Oliver Wani describes his experience with the Mandela Washington Fellowship as world-class. He got to connect with other young African professionals, studied at a respected university, and shared his thoughts and concerns with diplomats in Washington. But what left a mark on him more than anything else was a visit to a school in San Diego for homeless youth.
It's called a Monarch School. It's for the homeless kids. And I really felt that it's the same thing I should shift the other side. They call these kids, they groom them, and then they provide them with technical skills. And after that, they provide them with space to practice their skills.
The San Diego County Office of Education reports there to be about 23,000 homeless kids in San Diego this year, where Oliver lived for 6 weeks as part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship. The mission of the Monarch School is to educate students impacted by homelessness. It was there, in the West Coast city of San Diego, California, that Oliver started to think about using his entrepreneurial skills to build a school for homeless South Sudanese youth in his hometown of Kampala, Uganda. So Oliver decided to make connections and learn from people who would turn his vision into reality.
I looked at it as something important because it has been so impactful in the societies where they are. In most of the schools in Uganda now, they are a bit peaceful, more than when they are at home with other people. So I normally tell them to go back home and implement the same peace they have attained in the schools so that we build up a peaceful community, not only within the family, but also spread it out to the local people around them.
And Oliver hopes his work in community building will convince President Salva Kiir to embrace new ideas.
He should not focus only in one area, that the government is moving on well, and so he should focus on the government. Let him look into the society, his subject. What is this subject talking about? Let him listen to what the youth are talking about. Let him listen to what the women are talking about. Let him listen to what the refugees who have gone from South Sudan. Let him listen to them. Let him organize for something like that to listen to whatever they have to say and think twice.
At the same time, Oliver says South Sudanese, especially young South Sudanese, should take ownership of their country. He says the youth there should be empowered to demand peace and justice for their communities.
This nation is ours, and it will be ours forever. It will never change. If we can't embrace it and move forward, we are going to lose a lot of things because the resources are ours to build our nation. I don't want my kids to suffer the way I've suffered. I don't want my kids to see what my father went through. I want my kids to live in a peaceful place.
Despite having lived through years of conflict, Oliver says he has not given up on his country and believes that one day soon, South Sudan will be peaceful and prosperous. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Kenyans stood in long lines, some for over 7 hours today, to cast their ballots in close nationwide polls. They braved heavy rain and both cold and hot weather across the country. In the presidential race, President Uhuru Kenyatta is battling his longtime rival, opposition leader Raila Odinga, to keep his job. 33-year-old voter Emmanuel Musindi Wakakundi, who waited for more than 4 hours at his polling station in Nairobi, says the lines were a bit disorganized in the beginning, but otherwise things seemed to have run smoothly. Like many others, he said he wanted his voice to be heard, and it was the only thing he could do to change things. The Electoral Commission said heavy rain had hampered voting in three parts of the country, and helicopters were required to airlift materials and polling officials. The commission said voting would be extended in any polling stations that got a late start. Gok state officials say 42 people were killed and 53 others were wounded in a wave of intercommunal fighting Saturday and Sunday in South Sudan between the Wat and Ayel communities. State authorities have deployed police and soldiers to prevent more violence from erupting in the state. Local leaders say armed youth from Wat carried out revenge attacks against the Ayel community on Saturday, which led to more fighting between the two communities in the southern and northern parts of the state capital on Sunday. And finally, Jonglei State pupils and parents both say they've seen a marked improvement in teacher performance at schools where the teachers have been receiving monetary incentives from the Impact Project, which supplements the teachers' meager salaries from the government. The European Union is giving the Impact Project, which works with Mott MacDonald, money to supplement the government's monthly salary of just 600 South Sudanese pounds. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Nyam Nyam by Emmanuel Jal.
Like I left with a style. She's so fine with a silver mind. I like the way she whine and grind. I wish I could make her mine. Spend some time and make her shine. Under the sun I'll be her rain. Give her the life she deserves every day. If she's a shade I'll go and pray. Whatever she say I'll obey. To make her feel okay.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal with the song Nyam Nyam. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know your feedback about our show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com, or you find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.